And this brings us to our final presentation for this afternoon's session. Joe Salerno is a private record collector from Houston, Texas. His first exposure to recorded music was as a very young child playing with his mother's 78 RPM records in order to watch the record changer mechanism cycle through, and it was easier to do it with them. The LPs took too long. So he was exposed to 78s. And he bought his first record at the age of 11, two Mozart piano concerti played by Giza Anda on a Deutsche Grammophon label. And so we're going to have a virtual tour of Kurt Nock's facility over in Spring, Texas. And here's Joe Salerno.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It will take just a moment for this to load. Perhaps I should unload that. Just waiting for it to load. Let's see what we have here. All right. Longtime ARSC member Kurt Nock has been dealing in vintage records and phonographs since May of 1984. He opened his first retail shop next to Rice University in Houston called Memory Machines. The store was located at 2509 Rice Boulevard. A couple of years later, he moved to a new location at 1726 West Alabama. In addition to vintage records he sold and serviced the machines made to play them. Let's see if I can do that. How do we make this go full screen? There we go. Good. Now the next question is, how do I pause it and make it go? Spacebar? There we go. That'll work. Okay. Enter. Okay. Okay. Enter to play. After 5 years of running a retail establishment, the novelty had worn off and he found himself swamped with work. In mid-1989, while repairing an Edison cylinder phonograph, Kurt lost control of a mainspring which struck him in the face. That was the last straw, and by January of 1990, he closed the shop to focus solely on his mail-order record auctions, an endeavor which he began in December of 1988 with vintage record auction number one. In April of 2005, he's in his 37th such auction, which I believe you all received with your conference materials. He estimates that in those 17 years, he has listed and sold somewhere in the vicinity of 200,000 records. Closer to the mic, how's that? The current business is now located in Spring, Texas, about 45-minute drive from downtown Houston, operated from a 6,000-square-foot red brick building on 2 acres of land. There is even a barn, although there are no animals, and a small parking lot. Kurt travels 3 months out of the year, approximately 20 to 25,000 miles total. He has journeyed to Europe and South America, but missed an opportunity to visit Australia. Knox Vintage Records is a full-time business with a staff of 5. Upon returning from a record buying trip, the newly acquired stock is unloaded to the dock. From here, they go to the record cleaning room to be cleaned. Machine stuttering a little bit. This is Christy. Christy spends most of her time cleaning, lotting, or packing records. That's his employee, Christy. This is Brian Shelberg, and this is Brian's office. Brian is a full-time employee of Knox Vintage Records. Here, the records are graded visually and placed in a new discophile sleeve. The turntable can play a record as large as a 20-inch Pathé, and there are preamps for proper playback equalization. Audio from Brian's studio can be piped into any room in the building. Sometimes the studio houses an archaeophone, a modern electronic cylinder phonograph capable of playing as cylinders of every size, speed, and vintage. Knox Vintage Records is the sole distributor of the archaeophone, and due to the demand and the length of time it takes to make one, it's hard to keep them in stock. However, he does have one here at the conference, and you can see it this evening if you like. After Kurt and Brian enter the records into the network, the records are entered into the network computer database, Kurt, working from his own office, draws from the computerized inventory to compile a catalog. From here, the records go to the auction room or the pool room to be sorted. After sorting, records are placed on shelves in the record room, sorted by label and number, or alphabetically by artist, depending on the category. The room measures 17 by 42 feet and contains approximately 1,000 linear feet of shelving for disc and cylinder recordings, enough to hold 80,000 records. Here is the, we're not there yet. This is the cylinder cabinet in the record room. Yes. On the day that I visited the shop, I found a number of interesting items on display, including a Bettini microphonograph record, a Lambert indestructible cylinder, Nipper, a multicolored Decca, a 16-inch Flexo. There's the Decca. That is the brightest record I've ever seen, I do believe, and a Victor Monarch. Just outside the record room, you might encounter, the German Polyphone Company was initially a maker of disc music boxes, but in the early 1900s branched out into typewriters, pianos, automobiles, phonographs, and records. This machine from about 1910 is a fairly typical German outside horn machine, but the enamel panels are unusual. I've always found this to be a very attractive machine. And that record on the wall behind it was a 20-inch Pathé theater record. After the auction is assembled, the records are taken to the smaller auction room and placed on shelves in numerical order by lot number. When the auction is over and the results are in, the records are pulled and bundled in the auction room and sent to the packing room to be boxed and shipped to their new owners. As with most rooms in the facility, the walls, and in this case the ceiling, are generously decorated with artifacts pertaining to the history of recorded sound. The packing room is home to numerous horns, several original phonograph signs, lots of records, and a stained glass nipper. And sorry, there's the packing room. Sorry, this is stuttering so much. It's a combination of both, actually. And there's the stained glass nipper. Let's return to the pool room, which has earned this name because there is a pool table in the center of it used for sorting. A ping pong top on the pool table provides the flat surface. The pool room, also referred to as the phonograph room, measures 17 by 33 feet. The walls are generously decorated with prints, portraits, and a display of cylinder boxes, but the attention of any collector who would wander in would probably be drawn to the variety of unusual and in some cases quite rare machines. The earliest Zonophone concert grands from around 1901 had two beveled glass windows allowing the user to observe the workings inside. This example sold for $40 and sported a 9-inch turntable and a 24-inch horn. I wonder if early phonograph enthusiasts suffered from horn envy. This is the last version of Zonophone's concert model from around 1908, manufactured after the Victor talking machine takeover. This example is fully original, including the blue and yellow pedal horn. Now, the record's not from 1908. Here's an example of Edison's first commercial spring motor phonograph circa 1896, which sold for $100. This one was found in an English attic and is very well preserved. It appears to be that the original owners broke the glass diaphragm and put the machine away for good. The Edison Gem Model D was Edison's lowest priced machine, $15 in 1910. It came with a Model K reproducer and plays both 2 and 4 minute cylinders. This Columbia coin-operated graphophone type AS was one of the first jukeboxes designed for listening via ear tubes. This item dates from about 1898 when it sold for $35. This one lacks the marquee and feet, but is in fine condition. This is a reproduction of a Bergmann exhibition tinfoil, one of five made in 1957 by West Coast collector Ray Phillips. Unfortunately, Kurt discovered it was a reproduction after he bought the machine. Edison produced his first disc machine in 1912. Diamond disc phonographs differed from other disc phonographs in that the diamond stylus was permanent and the track to the record groove using a feed screw. This is a restored Edison B375, Louis XV, a top-of-the-line model from about 1913. The selling price was $375. It had gold filigree fittings, quite elegant. It's a very beautiful kind of reddish. Edison Triumph Model B, circa 1907, sold for $50 without horn. This model featured a three-spring Triton motor, played standard size 2 and 4 minute cylinders. It will play several records with a single winding. Yes, it does. C.G. Kahn Double Bell Wonder, circa 1898. This is extremely rare. This is the first... Yes. Kahn, the maker of musical instruments. This is extremely rare. This is the first spring-powered disc phonograph made to compete with the Berliner Grammophon. Only about four are known to survive. It features a bedplate with C.G. Kahn Wonder cast into the metal. Kahn is better known these days as a maker of musical instruments. Two horns were intended to provide extra volume. One of these has been repainted. The horn reproducer crank and horn yoke are reproductions. I believe it is. That's a 7-inch. It looks like a lamp. It gives off light like a lamp, but this is actually the Ferry phonograph lamp from around 1920, $50 at the time, manufactured by the Endless Graph Manufacturing Company of Chicago. The acoustic sound chamber moves up the tone arm, down the right column, and exits through an opening in the front lamp base. When the lid is on, it does not look like a phonograph. It has an electric motor and is uncommon. The wood grain finish is original, but the shade has probably been redone. Kalamazoo Duplex Phono from 1907, $29.85. Manufactured by the Duplex Phonograph Company. This is a rare machine with two silk-covered horns attached to either side of a single reproducer for greater volume. This is fully original and one of the finest examples known. Duplex records were produced by several companies, including Columbia, International Record Company, and the American Record Company. These records are scarce. This is the Berliner Improved Gramophone, the trademark model from about 1897. This model gained worldwide fame in Francis Barrow's painting, His Master's Voice, which depicted an image that would become the world's most recognized trademark, that of Nipper listening to a phonograph. This example has a side break and is fully original down to the turntable felt. Here's an Edison concert phonograph, early style, circa 1899, which sold for $100. It plays a 5-inch concert cylinder meant for use in large rooms, restaurants, and theaters.
Natural, don't you know? Some people, they seem bounders, and their
The Victor 6, this one from circa 1906, sold for $100. This was Victor's top-of-the-line outside horn machine. The brass pedal horn was an aftermarket horn made for this machine and is much rarer than the typical mahogany horns normally found on the Victor 6s. Personally, I would not have been embarrassed to have that on display in my home at the time. This is an Edison C4 radio phonograph from around 1929. It was available only for a couple of years. It sold for $295, not including tubes. That would be vacuum tubes, not ear tubes, to be sure. This is a walnut cabinet with sliding doors. The radio featured an 8-tube chassis, an electrodynamic speaker, and light-o-matic tuning. When you sift through 100,000 or more records, prepare an auction catalog, you eventually encounter some incredibly rare finds and some not so rare, but still quite unusual records demonstrating the diversity of the medium and the advancement of recording technology. Here are some, in no particular order. This first one is the earliest known commercially issued American disc recording. Only four 1892 Berliners are known to exist, and all were recorded in June. Two are dated June 12th. This example has the lower catalog number of 311. The label states Clarionet Introduction, Verdi, and is from Act 3 of La Forza del Destino. No, I didn't get a scan of these. Kurt, what is this pressed on, do you know? What is this pressed on? In 1901, the Buffalo Exposition was a grand affair. Like his competitors, Edison and Columbia, Eldridge Johnson had a large exhibit to promote his new trade in talking machines and records. A 3-inch advertising record was made to promote his exhibit. The grooved side has a very short selection stating, "Put me off at Buffalo. I want to see the exhibit of Victor and Monarch talking machines and records manufactured exclusively by Eldridge R. Johnson, Camden, New Jersey." The reverse side bears a picture and printed testimonial by the March King saying, "Dear Mr. Johnson, your Victor and Monarch records are all right." John Philip Sousa. This statement stands in stark contrast to his later widely circulated criticisms of the phonograph record, which he called canned music. Less than half a dozen of these records are known to survive.
"Put me off at Buffalo. I want to see the exhibit of Victor and Monarch talking machines and records, manufactured exclusively by Eldridge R. Johnson, Camden, New Jersey."
This Bettini disc of Pope Leon XIII was recorded on March the 5th, 1903.
Appartement privé de 62.
Eldridge Johnson, founder of the Victor Talking Machine Company, introduced the world's first 10-inch disc recorded in January 1901. Displaying great imagination, the new disc was labeled the Victor 10-inch Record. This label was used for less than a month, at which time it was renamed the Victor Monarch Record. This copy is an original first issue of Victor 3001, the first 10-inch record ever sold. The selection is When Reuben Comes to Town by S.H. Dudley, and it is unfortunately a very worn copy. This romance, performed by Jan Kubelek, is a G&T presentation disc, not commercially issued. On this next record, Lawrence Tibbett sings a duet with Lawrence Tibbett, Cuban love song on Victor 1550. Personally, I feel a little let down when listening to this selection. The duet part occurs only in the last 30 seconds of the side. Al Jolson will always be remembered for his singing in The Jazz Singer. Here's a 12-inch Vitaphone soundtrack from the movie, a 12-inch soundtrack disc from the movie in which he sings Blue Skies, and this excerpt is from slightly after that portion.
You'll never guess. Shut your eyes, Mama. Shut them for little Jackie. Oh, I'm going to steal something. I'll give it back. Back to you someday, too. You see if I don't. Mama, darling, if I'm a success in this show, well, we're going to move from here. Oh, yes, we're going to move up in the Bronx. A lot of nice green grass up there, and a whole lot of people you know of it. The Ginsbergs, the Guttenbergs, and the Goldbergs. Oh, a whole lot of birds. I don't know them all.
This next item is the unbelievable RCA Canada Ashtray record, being played on the portable sound system, which I somehow failed to get a shot of, but he brought it with him, so you can see it later if you'd care to. This is a variable speed turntable, phono preamp, EQ, amp, and speakers on a cart that can travel to any room in the building. He brought the record with him, by the way. It's on his display over in the exhibition room.
As president of the RCA Victor Company Limited Canada, I am using this novel ashtray, a product of our organization in Factory to extend our compliments of the season to you. On behalf of the organization, I express our appreciation of your interest and loyal support, which has helped us to make real progress this year. May the new year bring your share in the present economic recovery and a full measure of happiness in all respects.